This programme was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland.
Welcome to Return to the Pine Trees, a selection of six short stories for radio broadcast about growing up in the North Dublin areas of Turnipin Lane, Clunshock, Old Coolock Lane, Clochran and the village of Santry. These stories take place between 1965 and 1970 and they bring to life a time in these respective areas on the outskirts of Dublin City before it all changed forever. These areas weren't on their own when the changes came. There were many other small townlands and villages all around Dublin, both north and south, overwhelmed by a quickly expanding city. Unfortunately for my particular area, Turnipin Lane, which is just past Santry heading north towards Dublin Airport, change came from all sides. The city to the south, Dublin Airport to the north, and the M50 and M1 to the east. The airport in particular, which is only a mile away from Turnipin Lane, was a huge influence on the way things would go. I bring these stories to you, the listeners of Near FM Radio, hoping they are enjoyable to listen to and also to provide you a social record of what was happening on the outskirts of North Dublin in the late 1960s and the early 1970s. Some events have been combined to create a good narrative. In some cases, I go into a lot of detail, especially on my journeys from place to place and the people I meet along the way. This is the social document side of things. Music is very important to the stories, and in particular, Gilbert O'Sullivan, our Irish-born singer and songwriter. His songs always resonated a certain innocence, which is exactly what I want to convey in my stories. I hope they will act as triggers and transport you right into the very heart of the stories. Please join me on my journeys, and I hope you will enjoy the stories for what they are, stories about youth and growing up in North Dublin. I've decided to use my own voice and added some gentle sound effects as part of this radio book project, which gives the stories a little bit of depth, especially in the narrative. The name of this story is Match of the Day, Back in the Day, and it is the fifth story in our series of six. During the 1950s, Turnabin Lane had developed a great reputation with the Starlights GAA football team. They had a great local following, and they were the very first organised football team to come out of the 36 Turnabin Cottages. They burst on the Dublin GAA scene when they won the Thomas Ashe Minor Cup in 1952. I have an original photograph of that group, and it's one of my prized possessions. Local involvement with this team, however, faded in the 1960s, and soccer became the game for us Turnabin lads. During the summertime, when the evenings got long and bright, we never stopped playing football, and there was always a game going on somewhere. The football games back then had six possible locations. Dunn's Corner, at the top of Turnabin Lane. Carley's Field, at the back of the orchard wall. Dean's Garden, which was the rear garden of number 8. Madden's Garden, which was the rear of number 29. Barney Boland's Field beside McGurk's River, McKenna's Field facing Madden's and McGurk's, and lastly, Geraghty's Field at the top of Turnabin Lane. We always tried to avoid playing in the terrace itself, because of the paths, it was on concrete so if you fell you got hurted, and the gardens, which you had to avoid kicking the ball into. We had a few football baddies in the terrace, and they were Gocky Poocher in number 31, Mrs. Redmond, had Kit Finn in number 17, and the Granny Cassidy in number 5. If you canted the ball into their gardens, it was goodbye ball, game over. A golden rule in Turnabin football was that if you kicked the ball into the garden, you had to jump in and get it very, very quickly. When the Murphys, who lived in number 32, came out in force, they had enough for their own football team. The game would move down into the terrace, and we would have one goal at Doran's big gate at number 7 and the other at Murphy's big gate at number 32. So when you canted the ball in there or scored a goal, the family lived in the house anyway. Then the Murphy sisters and their friends would decide that they wanted the space outside their place to skip in. So our football game had to go back up to Dunn's Corner. The Murphy sisters, Breda, Marie, Kathleen, Geraldine and Lillian, usually got what they wanted, with Mrs. Murphy looking on enjoying a bit of skit. The scores in all these games were never 4-3. It was always something like 26-24 after 2 hours of noisy, fast football. When someone would shout out, next goal the winner, mostly coming from the losing team, and then the game went into hyperdrive until the killer goal was scored. The goalposts were the usual spare jumpers, and these caused all sorts of problems with disputed goals. A direct hit scattering the jumper usually counted as a wide. Other aspects of these games was that there was no offside rule, and we always played a fly, an outfield goalkeeper, especially if the numbers were low. With no offside rule in place, this encouraged hatching around the goal mouth, waiting for the overlap, and goals got by these hatchers were really despised. Effing hatcher was the usual chant, and a guaranteed heavy tackle on the goal scorer when the game resumed was guaranteed. During the road games, especially at Dunn's Corner, someone was always getting a skint knee or a grazed elbow from the hard stony surface. So a lemonade bottle full of water filled at the pump at Roberts's number 3 was stored in the safety of the grass banks along Dunn's Hedge. This venue was always very popular for the Sunday afternoon games. The Doc Roach was always a great man for joining into the middle of these games as he was passing by the corner on the way back from Keeley's after the Sunday morning session. He would usually come along, jacket slung over his shoulder. Then out of nowhere he would run at the ball, pushing and tackling as he went. As he tackled his way through, he would do a running commentary. The younger lads from both sides would be tackling him. Then the Doc would be gone, running on down the road to where he lived in number 26. His real name was Seamus Roach. He was a lot older than us. He was a gentleman who was always in good form. He worked in Jerry O'Brien's sweet shop up in Santry Village. Car traffic was very light back then, and the games at Dunn's Corners were only held up every now and again. One of the cool car drivers who often stopped the game when he was passing by was Ray Gunning from Clonchock. He once drove through us very slowly in a blue Zephyr Ford with a set of cow horns on the front bonnet and a blonde in hot pants sitting in the passenger seat. Now that caught our attention. Another of his cars was a big white Zephyr Ford 6, and it even had an onboard TV in the car. Ray was a real gadgets man. To us he was a bit of a pop star who brought glam to Turnipin Lane. He would drive home through our games on his way home to Clonchock facing Jolly's Hill. At one time he was in a covers band called the Penguins, and another member of the band was Brendan Redmond from number 24 in Turnipin Lane. Naming pop groups after animals was all the rage in the 1960s. Just think about it. The Beatles, the Monkees, the Birds, the Animals, the Turtles. So why not the Penguins? Thought love was only true in fairy tales, and for someone else, but not for me. Our love was out to get me. That's the way it seemed. Disappointment haunted all my dreams. Then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer. Not a trace of doubt in my mind. I'm in love. I'm a believer. I couldn't leave her if I tried. I thought love was more or less a given thing. Seems the more I gave, the less I got. What's the use in trying? All you get is pain. When I needed sunshine, I got rain. Oh, then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer. Not a trace of doubt in my mind. I'm in love. I'm a believer. I couldn't leave her if I tried. Then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer. Ray moved from the live band scene and very successfully went into the discotheque scene at the end of the 1960s. The Apartment, just off Fleet Street, was one of his most successful discos. There are many couples in Dublin today that met their spouses there, including myself and many of my friends. Despite this being a non-alcohol disco, the proximity to the Palace Bar was a great help to us budding drinkers. More about that in later stories. There were two older blokes around on the Turnipin football scene, and they organised a lot of the football games. These were Johnny Joyce and Jim Finglas. These were city slickers to us, hence their interest in soccer rather than the Gaelic football. Johnny had married local girl Mary McCormick, and Jim had married Jean Darcy. She was Johnny and Paul Darcy's older sister. Johnny Joyce worked close by in Roland Caravan, while Jim Finglas was a singer, sewing machine technician. These two always seemed to be in good spirits, and they brought a little order to our chaotic football games. I suppose you could call them our very first managers. These were very vocal on the ball, shouting as you tackled them, trying to put you off with their commentaries. Johnny Joyce in particular was always at this carry-on. Whenever there was a match in Carly's Field, Terry Dean's garden or Eddie Madden's garden, these two were always in the thick of it. Carly's was a great venue because the orchard wall was a bounce-back wall, so there was no sideline, which kept the game going better. It had one severe drawback, however, and that was losing the ball. If it went over the 10-foot wall, it was gone. And here lay the ultimate dare. The Carly's never really bothered with us playing in their fields, but going into the orchard after balls and running through their rhubarb was going too far. They had a dog who roamed the orchard, and his name was Coley Carly. Once you heard him barking, there was no way anyone would go in. Back with Johnny and Jim, who would be there picking the teams, they would be coaching and giving instructions and even a bit of a dispute resolution. If the game was really big, they would referee him half each, and the other one playing with his team, usually in goals. The two managers would trade insults during the game. "Are you bleeding blind, ref?" Or, "Jesus, ref, that's brutal. He's going to break someone's leg. I hope it's bleeding yours." During these games, there was always a bit of wild tackling from the less skillful. And I remember once when a fight broke out between my brother Noel and the late Andrew Roberts. Thank God, Johnny Joyce was there to stop it. There was always a few players that everyone wanted on their team, and Andrew Roberts was one of these. Fast, wary, and most of all, cocky, as he left you for dead with his fancy footwork. He was the one, if the ball was hopping kindly and he got sight of the gold, he would lam it really hard, and God help you if you blocked the shot with your body, or worse still, your face. Johnny Darcy was another twinkle toes. Once my cousin Hubert Brudel, Breda Boland's son, came and stayed for the whole summer. He shot straight into the top three on the first pick list. He was good. He was English. He had great speed and ball control, and he could do the three ups and downs in Dean's garden, just tipping the ball from foot to foot. Oh yes, he was our very own curly-topped Rye of the Rovers. Paul the Fodger Morphy, his older brother Liam the Fordner Morphy, and Polly Heaney, a sprat, were another few bright sparks. I was mid-table, along with the young Terry Deaners Dean, Jerry Gather Madden, Noel Hacker Morphy, Derek Sennett Madden, Eddie Vinton Madden, John Conlure the Big Hurl Connolly, and the younger brother Noel. We would get picked after the first three best players were already picked to each side. Down among the Sprats were Anto Morphy, Paul Hednor-Darcy, Willie Booney-Heaney, David Cooley, Desi Morphy, Stephen Pepper, Stephen Cooley and John Timmins. All of these were in the You Can Have the Rest section. Willie Heaney in particular had a tease fuse about 3 seconds long and would go on for the whole game giving out about who he was playing with and what an effing crap team his team was. I can still picture him now sulking across Eddie Madden's garden crying as he went, shouting back abuse as he was being teased, hence his nickname Booney because he cried so much. Nearly 40 years later, after settling in the new Turnipin Green which was built in 1975, I regularly meet Johnny Joyce and Jim Finglas and we talk about these famous Match of the Day football games that took place way back in the day in Turnipin. Just been listening to myself, Jerry Cooley, narrating one of my stories, Match of the Day, Back of the Day. This is the fifth story from our series of six, called Return to the Pine Trees. Next week, I will be reading the final story, called Going to Work for PJ Jones. I hope you'll join me.
don't know why. Sometimes I lie, other times I tell the truth. Sometimes even out of spite, I'm
The program was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland.